What is going on, crypto family? Today, we have got an awesome interview. It's quite the honor, man. This is the one and only Trace Mayer. So Trace is like the inventor of the proof of keys, the hodler of last resort. He has the super successful podcast, Bitcoin Knowledge. Trace was in Bitcoin, it seems, from day one. He's helped fund companies like Kraken and BitPay and Armory and probably a ton more. You know, he shares his thoughts with us on the market, you know, the cause of the run-up, then the crash, when he thinks it's going to come back, and, you know, so much more.
Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beetle shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beetles and his guests. Robert Beetles is a co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of Trading View Sessions, Crypto Beetles on YouTube, and on several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beetles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. And one last thing before we get into this, please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam.
So, without further rambling, let's go check out Trace and all the knowledge he drops on us. Catch you on the other side.
What is going on, crypto families? Today, we got quite the treat. We got Trace Mayer here. So, pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate you.
Yeah.
Cool, man. So, you know, you've got, you know, quite the established past. I mean, you've been an advocate for Bitcoin for a really, really long time. So, I mean, I guess just kind of start at the beginning. What got you into Bitcoin, man?
Yeah, I mean, I found it on the internet, read the white paper.
When?
Very early.
Like pre-9?
We don't talk too much about it. But yeah, and I'd actually published a book the same week that Bitcoin got put out. So I published my book that first week of January, The Great Credit Contraction.
Satoshi?
No. Like, that would be Hal Finney, right? We'll put that on the dead guy. But yeah, so I published the book, Great Credit Contraction, that first week of January 2009, and talked about how the Great Credit Contraction started. And yeah, it's kind of fun. Like, I have an example in the book of like a transaction, and you're trading silver for pizza. And so it's kind of a fun little book.
40,000 pieces of silver?
Yeah, 40,000. Yeah.
Actually, it'd be gold, right?
Well, yeah, I talk about gold and silver and like the role of the monetary metals and like free speech and, all of these types of things that are just so critical. And so Bitcoin makes a lot of sense with it. So, so Bitcoin makes a lot of sense with just this great credit contraction in general and the big macro environment where capital is going to be seeking safer, more liquid assets, you know, as it moves down the liquidity pyramid. And that's exactly how it's played out these last 10 years. And, you know, after the bailouts and the bail-ins and all this stuff in 2007, 2008. And so, you know, and then Bitcoin comes out, and I start publicly talking about that about the first week of January 2011. So let it percolate for a couple of years, and then, you know, off we go and start publicly talking about it, and people start accepting it and using it, and then we get, you know, first big bull run to $32, and the big crash to like $1.80. Been through all of them.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I started in 2011 because of Max Keiser when it was like the $3-4 mark. So obviously you were in way before me, and you've done some amazing things for the space, you know, with like your proof of keys.
Oh yeah.
The hodler of last resort.
Yeah. Got our little proof of keys hat for you, you know, that way, like next year, cause we'll do this every year on January 3rd, withdraw all your keys from third parties. And so, you know, you'll have a hat to kind of beat the drum with.
I love it. What paper do you have there?
Oh yeah. So this is actually a copy of the 2019 Times. And so we've got BitMEX took out an advertisement both on the front and then you got on the back. And yeah, so this is kind of this will probably become a little collectible also, kind of like the 2009 edition.
So the 2009, you said, goes for about $150,000 right now.
Yeah. Huh? I mean, they're kind of expensive. Yeah. It kind of upsets me.
So you want to put those guys in cold storage?
Yeah, I got a whole stack of them. I got like 42 of them, like, or something, and I'm gonna stick them in a safe, and I give a couple copies out to different people, you know. So, like, I've known Max Keiser gosh, we were involved in gold money stuff together with gold and even before Bitcoin. So I've known him like a long time.
It's crazy. And so you also invest in the space too. So you do more than just, you're more than just a voice, you know, more than just an advocate for it. You actually kind of put your money, you know, where your mouth is, so to speak, right? You invest in Kraken, BitPay, Armory.
Armory, big deal there.
So, you know, maybe kind of talk us through that. You know, what made you do that in the beginning, and are you still doing it now? And
yeah, I mean, I'm still doing it a little bit now. Nothing really makes me do anything. I'm definitely kind of a honey badger. But I guess I pay my taxes. They make me do that. But, you know, so my general investment thesis has been very different from people like Dan Moorhead or Barry Silbert. And,
I don't think Moorhead's doing so good right now, right? If you just sold Bitcoin, you might have been all right.
Play stupid games, win stupid prizes. But my general thesis has been stay close to the core. So you stay in the Bitcoins themselves, and then like, why hire Bitcoin? You know, play off of like, why hire a milkshake from Professor Christensen at Harvard? And then the seven network effects. And so we've got speculation, merchants, consumers, security or miners, developers, financialization, and then network, world reserve settlement currency. And each of these network effects has entire industries within them. And so we've got like, first network effect of speculation, you need to, you know, hold the Bitcoin itself. You know, that's at the very core. In order to do that safely or securely, you need wallet software. Well, you know, when Bitcoin was new, you didn't have deterministic wallets and you didn't have cold storage. And so when you created your wallet.dat file, would only have like 100 private keys in it. Now, you might move through those pretty quick. And so you might have backed your wallet up and then like moved through them, and you thought you were backed up, but you're not. Like, oops, oops, or go to 1,000 Bitcoins or whatever, right?
It was 21 million, right?
Yeah, not anymore. They're all on the bottom of the ocean, you know? And so that's why I funded Armory. You know, I wanted to be able to safely and securely store the Bitcoins. And so we innovated cold storage at Armory. We innovated hierarchical deterministic wallets. We innovated a lot of stuff, fragmented backups where we use Shamir secret sharing to split up the root seed, multi-sig with lock boxes, so Armory it became like a very core piece of infrastructure for the entire Bitcoin community. Pretty much any exchanges that were holding large amounts of Bitcoin were using Armory like in the early days, and even for several years, you know, because writing this software is not free. And the Bitcoin Core project was its focus on the network consensus, not really the wallet aspect. And so Armory runs on top of Bitcoin Core. So it uses all of that network consensus. So you don't have any security vulnerability when it comes to like validation of the transactions. And so it was solely focused on the private key management and being able to do that offline. And so that added, you know, that was just a huge piece of infrastructure that was used for years and years. You know, now we're getting much more sophisticated solutions that are coming out, but it's still not there yet for like large hedge funds or any of these like entities to be able to really custody Bitcoin for institutions in a large way. But it's coming. Slower the better, in my opinion, because if they don't have the software, they can't buy it. And if they can't buy it, the price stays down. And if the price stays down, that means we can buy more of it, more Satoshis for the same number of dollars. And like, yes, I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's fun to have the price run, but it's a lot more fun to acquire more Satoshis, you know, because price is going to run one of these days, whether we want it to or not. So that's BitPay. You know, if you want to speculate, speculation's first network effect, you need an exchange. So that's why I funded Kraken. And I like them because security, basically.
Yeah, Jesse's a good dude. Jesse and Bobby and all those guys.
Yeah, and we got a good team over there. And then second, third network effects are payment processors. So that's, you know, the role of BitPay.
Yep.
As long as you don't go a little crazy and just chase the Bcash or whatever, right? Like, come on, let's do Lightning Network. Seriously. It's what everybody else is building on. Layer two, modular development and stuff. But yeah, and then, you know, miners and developers and financialization. So we'll get to all of that stuff over the years. You know, as the Bitcoin network gets further and further entrenched and those network effects grow and develop and everything. And my general thesis has been, let's be at the core and slowly move out in terms of investment decisions, and not just throw mud at the wall and see what sticks.
Gotcha. Are you one of those guys that's, you know, just, you know, kind of like, you know, the, I guess the mantra here, it's Bitcoin, not blockchain, right? So are you just a complete Bitcoin purist, or do you believe in some ulterior, you know, alternative coins? Are you a fan of anything out there other than Bitcoin?
I'm an equal opportunity moneymaker, if that's the question. I mean, like Kraken, you know, some
they don't have a coin, they're a service.
Right. But like, so this would be the example, right? Like, big, you know, some people are like militantly Bitcoin only. And it's like, well, we only make 35% of our revenue at Kraken from Bitcoin. And my Kraken shares have outperformed my Bitcoin by 8x in Bitcoin. So why is that? It's because we're enabling choice, you know, and when people can choose, when people have more choice, like, we're wealthier. And so, like, let's have all the R&D and all the type of stuff. And like, if there's any type of coin that could pose a threat to Bitcoin, like, come at me, bro. You know, like, I mean, I think that's great. Like, Coke is a better company because of Pepsi, you know, this competition, the survival of the fittest, this very much Darwinian environment, I think is a good thing. Now, having said that, like, I don't think you're gonna, like, a lot of these altcoins just, they get obliterated, you know, and being able to challenge Bitcoin's dominance in terms of the network effects, like, please show me a coin that could potentially rival that. And I mean, seriously rival it, not just be a joke and say we're going to rival it, but actually pose a threat. Because I mean, nothing's got nearly the liquidity, the scalability, and the security that Bitcoin has. I mean, even look at Ether. I mean, you ever synced a full node from scratch lately?
Takes a minute.
takes a millennia. I mean, even a light node's like 137 gigabytes. I mean, this is craziness.
Thank God we don't have dial-up anymore, right?
Yeah. And then Ether Classic, like, had a reorg attack, but nobody knew because nobody was running a full node. I mean, it's just such a joke. Like, and that's like a $500 million market cap coin.
And the price didn't even move when it got attacked.
Right. Yeah, because nobody's using the coin. So, like, what difference does it make, right? So don't get me wrong. The first network effect of speculation is incredibly strong. Like, you can have a coin that has a major security issue and the price doesn't even budge because it's just being traded on, like, some algo, right?
Yep.
But at the end of the day, fundamental use case, fundamental, like, there's never a free lunch. Like, these coins, like, price is going to follow value in the long run. And so Bitcoin is where it's at when it comes to the security, liquidity, the scalability, the network effects, the brain trust, like the innovation, the intellectual combustion, all of that's, you know, honing in around Bitcoin. It's on that beacon. That doesn't mean that, like, we won't be able to speculate on altcoins and, like, make some money and lose some money and, like, have fun. You know, that's all fun and games. You know, if you're looking out 20, 30, 40, 80 years, you know, and a real investor, they're looking out decades. They have different time preferences, Saifedean likes to talk about. And that's a big thing for me too in this space. If you want to be, like, short-term day trader and, like, gambling, and we're in Vegas, like, hey, it's like, nothing wrong with that, right? Like, hey, let's have some fun. But keep in mind that, like, you're having fun, and most, if not all, of these altcoin projects, they're just kind of like jokes. You know, they're white papers with buzzwords. And Bitcoin is, like, it's where the network effects are at. I would like to see more coins that have legitimate network effects, but how the economics and the game theory work, I don't know that we're really gonna see that.
Yeah, and I mean, to speak to your point, I mean, most of the stuff that we see are just kind of, you know, forks or knockoffs of Bitcoin that they're trying to put their own little spin on, right?
Yeah.
They're not really advancing or pushing the technology forward. They just kind of fork it or something like that, maybe make a little tweak here or there, but it's not something revolutionary. It's not something that's game-changing, kind of like Bitcoin is.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Yeah, I mean, Bitcoin category creator. I mean, you look at the top coins, like Dash is a fork out off of Bitcoin, sure. But then, okay, so you fork off of it, but if all the development, Dogecoin, yeah, that's a great one, you know. But if you fork off of it, and then more stuff is happening on Bitcoin, like Schnorr and Taproot and Graphroot and, like, all this stuff, you're going to have code rot like on the fork. And are you going to have the developers that have the confidence to like pull in the latest developments out of Bitcoin? And that's just to stay even, right? Like that, you got to be significantly better than Bitcoin, you know, to really overtake those network effects.
Yeah, most of the stuff that we see now are just, if they're claiming to be faster or whatnot, they're just basically extravagant databases, right? So, I mean, if you look at like, you know, like Ripples and Stellars and
Ripples is a joke. Seriously?
But they're basically just, you know, centralized databases of sorts, right? I mean, so is it really true blockchain like Bitcoin? You know what I mean? Is it really, you know,
decentralized, peer-to-peer, censorship resistant?
Exactly.
If your blockchain is able to be censored,
what's the point?
Yeah, I mean, what are you doing? I mean, blockchains are there to validate computation, not necessarily to do the computation or, I mean, it's to validate it. It's to establish a form of trust or fact in terms of information theory. And so immutability, to me, is a very core principle for security.
No, I agree with you. One of the things, too, that I think is going to happen is we're going to see, you know, like we do now, we have thousands of different cryptocurrencies. And eventually there'll be some way to, you know, maybe a centralized or some type of service, maybe it'd be decentralized where it allows for interoperability between all these tokens and coins to actually transmit value. So if you have, you know, 50 Doge coins or you've got 50 XYZ coins or whatever, it doesn't matter what you're holding. They'll be able to be converted into that currency and be able to pay for goods and services, but they're not going to have the technology and the advancement like Bitcoin does. You know what I mean? But
what about sidechains? Sure. You know, Adam Back comes out with sidechains. I remember seeing like little meme and it was like, I heard a million altcoins cry out in pain and then they were silenced, you know, like from Star Wars. And I mean, that's where you're going to be getting interoperability, things like Liquid and sidechains. And, you know, this concept of programmable money and the extensibility is very, I mean, it's very explosive. Having that interoperability, I think, is going to become key. You know, I mean, having a sidechain that's like for reward points and a different sidechain for insurance type contracts or things like this. I mean, that'd be great because you could like have custom rules on each of these sidechains, but you want to have them impregnated with the Bitcoin because that roots them like into the trust and into the Bitcoin blockchain and gives value and makes the smart contracts like be able to settle and oracles and like all this stuff becomes, you know, important.
Where do you see like the, you know, the biggest opportunities in crypto right now? Because everybody's, they see the market, you hear like this overwhelming cry that crypto's dead.
Yeah, right.
I argue on the other hand, this is like the perfect time to be building when you have, you know, the right type of people in the space, right? Not just all the people, you know, pumping things to the moon and, you know, it's just a bunch of, you know, white paper promises and garbage, right? So where do you see like the biggest opportunities right now for people, for the industry, for, you know, just for the world in general in crypto?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit on it, like building. One is invest in yourself. Two is, you know, invest in those relationships that you can develop with other people. I was at the first Satoshi roundtable. Bruce had asked me to kind of give the opening welcome address to everybody. And I was like, yeah, everybody, like, look to your left, look to your right. Like, these are the people that you can do business with because they're here in the bottom of a bear market, like in 2014, right? Like, we'd had this cleansing. It'd been a lot of bloodletting. You know, you get all these people, like, hot money, they're chasing the price, they run in, and then the price starts going down, and they melt away. You know, they slink back into their hole and like put a rock over their head. You can't build business and relationships and stuff with that type of like fair weather friend. Why invest in that relationship? Because they don't have the staying power. You know, when it comes to who are you going to listen to? You know, what YouTube channels or podcasts or like news sites, like who are you going to listen to? What companies are you going to be doing business with? There's a big difference between some exchange that started up in a bull run in 2017 versus some exchange like Kraken that's been around since 2011 right. And been through all the bear markets and hasn't gotten hacked.
Like CZ, you know.
Yeah. I mean, CZ seems to be kind of crushing it though.
He's like one of one, right?
Yeah.
Everybody else for the most part, you know, they've tried to do that.
Yeah. I mean,
like a gazillion exchanges now and they're all seem to be exit scams.
Yeah, exactly. You know, proof of keys. Like why you need to get those keys in your hand. I try to interview only the top people in Bitcoin on my podcast. Even when
Bitcoin
I go back.
Knowledge.
Yeah, Bitcoin Knowledge Podcast. And when, you know, I go back and look at the archive list every now and then. And guess what? Some of these people aren't in the space anymore.
Imagine that.
And yeah, like
price went down and like, they disappeared.
Like John Batts from Noble Markets. Like, where are they at? They're gone. Poof. And so, you know, that's an important thing, you know, invest in yourself, develop your knowledge. That gives you optionality because there are a lot of people like, you know, the price goes up and my email inbox just explodes, you know, people wanting to buy Bitcoin. And it's like, you need to know how to secure your Bitcoin to have the optionality to buy it. Otherwise, you're going to buy it and get hacked and lose it. And so like, now's the time to be developing all of that knowledge and understanding. And now's the time to be building your businesses and be gathering all that human capital. Because guess what? Like Bitcoin, it's in forward motion like never before. Go look at all the pull requests. Go look at like the developer email list. We have different IRC rooms and Slack rooms where we talk about stuff. It is on. People are getting left behind because, you know, they run in because they're chasing the price. Then they like evaporate off and leave. And they think that Bitcoin 2018 is the same as Bitcoin 2014 or Bitcoin 2012. You know, when the next bull run comes, and who knows when it'll be, we're currently in the longest bear market ever.
It's like 411
days or so far or something. Previous was 410. So, hey, you know, maybe it'll turn eventually, right? Longer the better, in my opinion.
I was going to ask you about that too, but...
yeah, I mean, longer the better, in my opinion, because the more we can cleanse the ecosystem of actors that just aren't fit for purpose and accumulate, you know, as hodlers, like all the better, right? Bitcoin 2035 is going to be completely different from Bitcoin 2018. Same with Bitcoin 2025 and Bitcoin 2030. And so it becomes very cumulative and you have to be continually working on yourself to like stay up to speed on it.
So for people that are, you know, always wanting the predictions, right? And predictions are crazy. Nobody knows. But how long do you think this is going to play out the way it's been? You know, going kind of sideways down. Do you think it's going to go down even more? Or do you think some people are talking $1,200 Bitcoin? Some people are talking, you know, $25,000 Bitcoin. Nobody really knows. It's all just, I mean, you know, 12 numbers out of their butt.
Yeah, right? $1,200 Bitcoin would be kind of tough. I mean, I've called every Bitcoin bull market in advance. $388 Bitcoin, December 2015. I wrote an article, start of the fourth great Bitcoin bull run. And sure enough, like, and then 6 months later, I did quite a few interviews, like with Jeff Berwick and some other people saying, hey, we're going to see $3,000 Bitcoin or $3,500 Bitcoin. So I kind of understated it a little bit, I guess, because you never know where it's going to run. You know, I mean, yeah, we want to have a crystal ball. I mean, $1,000 Bitcoin, I highly doubt it. I mean, you look at the total correction, it's been like 80%+. I mean, it was a huge bull run, like in 2017, up to 20 grand. The relative percentages, it was only 3.7x on the Mayer multiple. That's the current price divided by the 200-day moving average. And then you can graph that over time and look at standard deviations to see how far outside the mean you are. The previous runs were like 12x and 8x. So 3.7x was like half of previous runs. I mean, it could have run to like 40 grand to be that 8X, you know, or even higher to be the 12X. Because we're not having quite as big a runs to the upside, I don't know that we'll necessarily have quite as big pullbacks to the downside. And we've already had a huge pullback, you know, 80%+. So, I mean, really, you think we're going to go to like 90, 95, 97% pullback? I highly doubt it. Yeah, well, I think that raises a huge point of like why we're seeing what we're seeing. We had just a huge speculative altcoin bubble with a lot of misallocated capital. And those losses need to get taken.
Right.
And that's what's happening. Then you see how a lot of these altcoins interacted with like Ether and all these ICOs. And so there's just a lot of the selling pressure. You know, Shapeshift laid off like a third of their workforce. Well, when Shapeshift goes out of business... You know, when companies go out of business,
right,
and then we can reallocate the factors of production, that's when we're like at the bottom of the bear market, when people have to start selling their Bitcoin to make rent and to eat, you know, and that's how that's how the hodlers of last resort, that's how they accumulate their coins. And I don't know that we're necessarily there yet.
What do you think turned off, you know, I guess the faucet to all the wealth that everybody was accumulating, right? So we had this huge price run. What do you think caused that?
Oh, I mean, human action and psychology. That first network effect of speculation is so powerful. They discover gold. And this sleepy little town of 850 people becomes like one of the major cities of the world, right? Like, I mean, a city completely built on speculation. and nothing's changed. And so you have,
we found it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so there's still like, you know, the whole way that venture capital functions and these altcoins, and like they're just keep running that speculative bubble up and up and up. I mean, $3 billion went into ICOs, and now in 2018, I think like something like $16.3 billion has gone into ICOs. Or I mean, it's crazy. Like people keep putting more money into them.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at it, it's just like a handful of companies that absorbed all that money, though, too. It's not, you know, like in 17, it was a ton of ICOs. But in 18, there's a couple handfuls.
Right. So
it's mostly just like four or five real big ones.
So it's getting, you know, the venture capital investment, the ICOs, like, you know, the investors are kind of reining back, or let's call them speculators because they're not even really investors. They're just like throwing money at whatever.
My buddy said it's going to moon.
Yeah. And then we have all types of shenanigans, you know, the SEC is having to go after now. It's kind of like the great internet bubble, you know, like same psychology at work. And we get these, you know, that's just how human psychology works. And so when you're well outside those standard deviations with the mirror multiple, like that's a time to take some profits, bank back into like USD or perhaps real estate or some other asset class, you know, and then get ready to start accumulating when everybody's in the street bleeding. I mean, I acquire Bitcoins like every month, you know, and I acquire more when that mirror multiple is lower.
Yeah, smart. Yeah, just cost average every single day. That's what I do. So
yeah, because I have like positive cash flowing businesses and other assets like that, and I like to allocate it in Bitcoin. Then we had all these forks. You know, we had like Bcash and Bitcoin Gold and like all this stuff. So, you know, you take these forks, and that way you can actually sell. Well, yeah, you can roll it into more Bitcoin, but like you got to, like, I mean, I paid all my taxes on this stuff. And so, you know,
Uncle Sam.
Yeah. Yeah. And go check the IRS record because it's a big old fat check. It's very painful, but you know, I don't want any issues with that. So
here, Puerto Rico's nice this time of year.
Yeah. But I don't want to be there 6 months or whatever. You got to be there. I got other things to do with my time. You know, we had all these forks. And so like in my situation, it's like, oh, do I want to acquire more Bitcoins or do I want to perhaps have USD and sit in that and, you know, and then acquire the Bitcoins when the mirror multiple is a little bit more friendly. You know, you sell out the Bcash, like I had an average sale price like 0.118 Bitcoin, but you know, then you're exiting out into Bitcoin at like $10,000-$12,000. Then you sit on the USD and then you start acquiring at like 3,000. And all of a sudden, like you're picking up 0.6 Bitcoin per Bcash.
Very smart. Very smart.
You know, and it's like, oh, thanks, Jihan. That was great. I love your mother.
That's awesome. Yeah, I could talk to you about, you know, Bitcoin and crypto all day long. I know you got to get up on the stage here pretty quick. You know, but rather than just talking about crypto the whole time, you know, let's talk a little bit about yourself a little bit, you know, like, you know, maybe some personal stuff, right? So like, who is like your biggest hero as a kid?
Oh,
who shaped you into the guy you are today, man?
That's a great question. I watched a lot of like Next Generation. So like Captain Picard's like,
Captain Picard,
yeah, yeah. That's like Patrick Stewart. Star Trek dad, right?
Roger A.T.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I got lots of role models, you know, I got intellectual role models like Dr. Vieira, Guta, Newton, you know, developed the gold standard, Dalai Lama. I think there's a lot of wisdom that, you know, comes from him. A little bit of that.
Awesome.
You got to do a lot of reading, you know? You,
speaking of reading, what's your favorite book?
Oh, favorite book? Gosh, I don't even know. I like Elective Affinities by Guta. Like that's a phenomenal book because it talks about, yeah, it's incredibly deep. Guta was the highest IQ person like ever, right? Had 90,000 word working vocabulary, so three times Shakespeare's.
Jesus and Solomon, then him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we don't necessarily know, like we don't have enough writing from like Jesus or Solomon to like figure out where the IQ would fall at, right? But like Guta, we do. And in terms of working vocabulary, he was three times Shakespeare, who was next highest in terms of working vocabulary. I mean, universal polymath genius and everything. Faust Part 2 is magnum opus. He talks about all the negative effects of society from debasing the monetary unit. But in this book, Elective Affinities, he comes up with a theory of human thermodynamics. So I find that to be very interesting. And it's almost like we've seen it play out in some ways with like the Bcash fork and everything. It's like, oh my gosh, we do seem to have these like bonding agents and like dissolving agents and stuff like that with human relationships. And yeah, it's really wild, you know, like what some of these polymaths from a couple hundred years ago, the ideas that they came up with. And I think that humanity's still trying to catch up with like the minds of these, some of these geniuses.
Great stuff. I just heard your name being called up on stage. So
I've been drafted.
Yeah. I can talk to you all day. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Man. Yeah.
Trace, it's been an honor.
It's been wonderful. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Huge thanks to Trace, man. What an honor. I really appreciate you, all that you've done for the space, all that you continue to do. You're awesome, man. And if you guys haven't checked out his podcast, make sure you guys do. It's Bitcoin Knowledge. All right, so Bitcoin Knowledge is its podcast.
Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beatles shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beatles and his guests. Robert Beatles is a co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of TradingView Sessions, Crypto Beatles on YouTube, and on several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beatles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. And one last thing before we get into this, please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the family.
You are all awesome. Love you. God bless you. And I'll catch you on the next one.